The story of HMS Amethyst is true, and this dramatic reconstruction of it was shot with all possible accuracy in and aboard Amethyst herself. The producers' apologies are due, however, to the officers and ship's companies, the Chinese interpreter, and many others whose parts in the original action have not been portrayed. These omissions have been dictated solely by the limitations of screen time. To the Admiralty, the War Office, and the Air Ministry, to commanders-in-chief, officers and ratings of HMS ships and other naval establishments who have contributed so much to the making of this film, the producers tender their sincere thanks. Herbert Wilcox presents Richard Todd in Yangtze Incident, the story of HMS Amethyst. Also starring William Hartnell, Akim Taramoff, Donald Houston, Kiye Luke. Based on the book by Lawrence Earl, also an idea by Franklin Gollings and official Admiralty records. Music composed and directed by Leighton Lucas. A warship heads up a wide river.
On April the 19th, 1949, a frigate of the British Navy, HMS Amethyst, left Shanghai for Wusong and passage up the Yangtze River to Nanking, the Chinese capital. China was then in a state of civil war, and Amethyst was taking essential supplies to the British embassy. She was also ordered to relieve the destroyer Consort, which had been standing by in Nanking, ready to protect British lives and property there. She was on her lawful and peaceful occasions.
Crewmen busy themselves on deck as HMS Amethyst cruises along the still waters of the Yangtze, her pennant number F116 prominently displayed on the portside hull. Fluttering in the breeze at the rear of the ship is a white ensign, a St. George's cross, with a Union Jack in the top left corner. Displayed on the stern is the name Amethyst.
A little more to the starboard, Captain.
Thank you, pilot. Starboard 10.
Starboard 10, sir.
In the telegraph room, an operator wearing headphones writes something. A crewman taps him on the shoulder, and he removes the headphones.
Weather report from Hong Kong. That's all.
Okay.
The relief operator sits down. In the engine room, an officer in an oil-smeared peaked cap wipes perspiration from his neck with a cloth as he examines banks of large brass dials. He gives an affirmative nod to a rating. Cooks are busy at work in the ship's kitchen. One preps a huge joint of meat before putting it in the oven. Another chops cabbage while a sleepy cat looks on. The cook in charge of the meat now turns his attention to a large pan of liquid. He stirs it, then dips in a finger.
Hey, Dusty, can we have some more sugar?
More sugar? What do you do with the stuff? Burn it?
Burn it?
A young sailor with a quiff heads along a corridor to an open hatch and raps on the counter.
All right, Arno, head in.
The sailor takes the tin he's handed and examines the label as he walks away. He stops and turns back.
Errands in, not plain errands. I like the tomato sauce.
The storesman swaps the tin for another.
I don't know where you find room for it all. Herrin's in.
Take it easy with that water, you ham-fisted wets. Don't go slopping it all over that deck. You want to be careful, son. You get your feet wet.
Say, okay.
Well?
Any girls, where are we going?
Girls in Nanking. I'm surprised at you, Martin. Fancy a young lad like you thinking about such things. Well, I'll tell you, son. Of course, I'm a married man myself, but if you've seen some of the things that I've seen...
A shell explodes in the water.
Someone's firing at us.
Blimey, you're right, son. All right, back tracking.
My house.
Sir?
Action stations.
Aye, sir.
Frantic activity is reflected in the gleaming surface of the alarm bell as the crew take up positions. The captain peers through binoculars.
Number one.
Yes, sir.
Get the Union Jacks unfurled. Starboard first.
Aye, aye, sir.
Full ahead, both.
Full ahead, both, sir. Both engines on the show, full ahead, sir.
The Union Jacks are unfurled over the side.
Yeoman?
Sir?
Break out battle ensign.
Aye, sir.
Ensigns are flown from the T-shaped radio mast. Plumes of spray erupt out of the water as two more shells explode.
It's coming from the north bank, sir. I saw the flash that time.
Tell director, train on bearing, green 70.
Aye, sir.
Train on green 70!
Shells are loaded as a gun turret swings round.
The battery position somewhere beyond that creek, sir, but I can't get a range. Watch for the flashes!
Artillery guns fire on the ship from the bank.
Open fire!
Open fire!
As the artillery guns continue to shell the ship, the Amethyst unleashes a salvo of return fire. The Amethyst is cloaked in a heavy mist of smoke and spray. Fireballs flare off the ship's hull. In the wheelhouse, leading seaman Frank and an officer are thrown off their feet by a violent explosion. The Amethyst continues to be bombarded with heavy artillery fire as it negotiates a steady path through the exploding shells. In the wheelhouse, Frank comes to on the floor. He struggles to sit up. Grimacing with pain, he glances to his right, where a man's body is slumped in a corner. Frank shakes the man's arm gently.
My house,
sir.
Tell the wireless office, make from Amethyst all ships. I'm under heavy fire.
Frank lurches over to the ship's wheel and frees a dead man's hand that's clenched around it. Using the wheel to haul himself up, Frank speaks into the trumpet end of a voice pipe.
Wheelhouse bridge! Wheelhouse bridge!
The bridge has received a direct hit. The Amethyst ploughs on under ferocious fire.
Wheelhouse, bridge! Yarder's got off the water! Wheelhouse! Bridge! Wheelhouse!
On the bridge, Lieutenant Weston shakes his head groggily, then crawls across to the captain.
Sir! Sir!
The captain remains unconscious. Weston leans on the vertical voice pipe as he struggles to his feet. A trickle of blood runs from the corner of his mouth.
Stop engines! Pull astern, both!
Pull his turn closer.
Frank turns a wheel, but another refuses to budge. A needle on a dial in the engine room points to full.
What's the matter with him up there?
It must be jammed. Pull the stone starboard. Quick!
Wheelhouse, engine room. Wheelhouse, engine room.
Hard a starboard, coxswain. We'll be on the mud in a moment.
Wheels hard a starboard, sir. Starboard telegraph jammed. And I can't get the engine room on the voice pipe.
The Amethyst runs aground. Weston looks about him in frustration.
It's no use, coxswain. Stop both engines. She's stuck fast.
A Chinese soldier looks through his binoculars, then says something to a soldier holding a radio telephone, who relays orders to the gunners above them. The Amethyst comes under a fresh onslaught. As the Amethyst returns fire, one of the gun turrets is hit. An officer sprints along the deck to where several crewmen have been injured. One clutches his face as he slumps to the floor. Another falls back in the officer's arms, unconscious. The officer eases him down onto the deck.
Let's take this message. Under heavy fire. I'm aground. Large number of casualties. Position. Position. Have you worked out our position?
I've worked out a position, but I can't say if it's right or not. The chart's in a bit of a mess.
Hey, add that to the message.
Right. You're coughing blood.
Oh, yes, a little. Did you get the signal?
Yes, sir. Shall I code it up, sir?
No. Plain language.
Plain language, yes, sir. Doctor. There's a man bleeding so badly, I can't stop it.
All right.
I'll be right there.
Don't move any more than you have to.
Roger.
Aye, sir.
Start lowering some boats. We may have to evacuate the ship, or at least some of the wounded.
Weston removes his tie as the telegraph operator taps out a message. On deck, crewmen run for cover at the sound of an incoming shell. It explodes, showering an officer with debris as he hurls himself down some steps.
Doc! Doc, are you all right? Doc!
The doc and a crewman lie dead.
My God.
The telegraph operator taps out a Morse code message, reading from notes in front of him on the desk.
You see, sir, the position they give puts it 60 miles away from the river. It's obviously wrong.
Working on a time basis, she's probably along here somewhere. It's the wounded I'm worried about, sir. Kerens had better try to reach her overland and get them into the hospital at Xinjiang.
I'll get a letter of authority for him to enter the defended area. You speak the language, Dee Dee. You'd better go along, too.
I'd be glad to, sir.
Yes? One moment, please. It's the American ambassador, sir. They've heard about Amethyst.
Good morning, Walter. No, it doesn't look too good. Well, I'm sending my assistant naval attaché and military attaché overland to see what we can do. Yes. Oh, yes, indeed. We'd be very grateful. Well, they better rendezvous in Xinjiang on the way, don't you think? Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. Goodbye. Well, the Americans have got a U.S. Navy doctor there at the moment. They've offered to lend him to us. He'll meet you in Xinjiang.
Right, sir. I think I'll ring up Chinese naval headquarters now and see what news they have.
In the sick bay, the wounded are being tended to. One has a bandage around his head. Another, in shock, stares into the mid-distance. An officer, Lieutenant Strain, checks him over.
Don't worry, you'll be all right.
Strain heads over to a table and picks up a hypodermic needle.
Number one's orders.
To save life, we're evacuating to the South Bank.
Everybody?
A steaming party will remain on board, but everyone else who can move is to go ashore. We'll try and get the wounded to the hospital. The unwounded can wait ashore until it's dark and then come back to the ship. Is there someone who can get the wounded after the boats?
I look after that.
Good.
What about the captain?
Him too.
All right. Now, come on, you lads. Now, get these stretchers aft to the boats.
Aye, sir.
Oh, I can pull an oar, sir.
All right. Get going.
Aye, sir.
In the telegraph room.
Still can't raise consoles, sir.
All right. Make this to Hong Kong. Have destroyed all confidential books. Please make all signals in plain language. That's it.
Yes, sir.
And hurry with it. Soon you'll have no more power, then you won't be able to transmit at all. After that, you two are going ashore with the rest.
Aye, sir.
Message coming through, sir. From consort, sir. On our way. Is it possible to tow you off the mat?
Tell Lieutenant Head to get a towing wire ready.
Aye, aye, sir.
A rope ladder extends down the side of the Amethyst to a rowboat full of crewmen.
Let go forward! Let go aft! Bear off forward, bear off aft! Stand by! Give way! Together!
Weston winces as he clutches his chest and slumps into a chair. He draws his jacket hurriedly across his chest at the sound of approaching footsteps.
Look, number one, I think I may be able to get the auxiliary WT working. Have you got a spare telegraphist?
No, I haven't. I sent them all ashore. There's nothing they could do here. What about one of the radar people? If they haven't all gone too.
Well, I'll see what I can find.
Through binoculars, an officer on the bridge watches a warship signal to the Amethyst with a flashing light.
Consort in sight, sir!
All right, you lads, on the tow rope, at the double. And you. Johnny, up here. Get on that rope!
Strain comes down some steps onto a deck where a group of wounded seamen are gathered.
Are there any telegraphists on board?
Don't know, sir. Don't think so, sir.
Right, let go up!
Hold it a minute, guns!
Hold on, forward!
Are there any telegraphists down there?
Yes, sir. French here.
Well, get back on board.
Aye, aye, sir.
French climbs off the rowboat onto the rope ladder, and a crewman gives him a hand up onto the deck.
Let go forward!
HMS Consort hoves into view, its progress followed through binoculars by a Chinese soldier. Western heads up onto the bridge. Chinese artillery guns open fire on the consort. Several shells explode close to a marshy area where evacuated crewmen from the Amethyst have taken refuge. Some rush to help their shipmates ashore as another rowboat arrives. One injured crewman has to be carried while another is stretchered ashore. The rowboat pulls away from the muddy bank.
They've got her range already.
Is there nothing we can do to help her, sir?
Nothing.
Consoles, open fire!
With a Union Jack and its pennant number D76 displayed prominently on its hull, the consort unleashes a barrage of gunfire. On board the Amethyst, Frank hits the deck as a shell hits the ship. Clutching the looped end of a thick rope, he crawls along the deck, dragging it to where another rope lies coiled. Frank then slips the end of that rope through the loop of the tow rope. The consort signals to the grounded Amethyst as it passes by under heavy fire. Frank and another crewman duck.
Your turn'll come next, you dirty lot of...
Don't waste your breath.
They huddle together as another shell whistles overhead, then untangle their arms, looking embarrassed when the danger has passed. The tattered and scorched ensign of the Amethyst flutters defiantly as the consort heads past. Weston watches it go with a look of anxiety and disappointment. On land, the injured crewmen all wear concerned expressions.
Consort signaling, sir. Stand by. We'll try again.
She's been hit already. If she stops to tow us off now, she'll get shot to pieces.
The consort heads back past the Amethyst under a storm of artillery fire and takes several hits. Weston looks on helplessly. Blackened scorch marks on the consort's hull show where the ship has been hit by shells as it runs the gauntlet of the Chinese assault.
Several times. Number of casualties. Will have one more try.
They must have hit the wheelhouse. She's steering from aft.
As soon as she gets out of it, the better.
Black smoke belches from the bow of the consort. The warship continues to signal as bursts of spray erupt in the water around it. The injured Amethyst crewmen look on with fearful expressions. On the bridge of the Amethyst, Weston watches in dismay as the consort makes the third pass, signalling as it does so.
Sorry, not a hope. Must pull out. Good luck.
Reply. Thanks for trying.
The consort retreats down the river, still under heavy fire. Frank's clinging to the arm of his mate, Walker, as they watch the consort depart. They share a disappointed look. On land, two crewmen look despondent.
Well, she tried.
Come on, lads. Let's get going.
Weston sighs heavily as the consort becomes a distant grey shadow.
As soon as it's dark, we'll flash up the boilers again, lighten ship forward and refloat it ourselves. If we ditch the oil in the forward fuel tanks and jettison everything we can, that should do the trick. We might even go on up to Nanking.
In the telegraph office, French writes down a message.
From Shanghai, sir. An emergency.
Read it out.
Yes, sir. One. Report summary of vital damage. Number of effective officers and ratings remaining on board. Whether there are sufficient to steam the ship if refloated. Number of seriously wounded still on board. Two. If ship can be refloated, proceed. Anchor approximately 10 miles upriver and await further orders. Three. Sunderland aircraft from Hong Kong will endeavour to alight river tomorrow morning, bringing doctor and medical supplies if considered practical. Ends.
You hear that, guns? They're going to try to get a Sunderland in.
Yes, I heard. But look, what about sending the rest of the wounded ashore in the morning?
Lost half the ship's company ashore as it is. Shanghai says that if we can get it off the mud, then the London and the Black Swan will try and get up to us tomorrow. The rest of the wounded can be transferred to them. They'll get treatment quicker that way. Yes, Stuart?
We've pumped out 20 tons of oil fuel. She ought to move now.
Supposing we do get off number one, London still may not be able to get up to us. Look what happened to Consort.
Consort isn't a county-class cruiser. Come on. Let's get it off the mud.
Water laps gently at the Amethyst's hull as it lies stranded and vulnerable.
This is the General Overseas Service of the BBC. Here are the headlines. Two more British warships have been fired on in the Yangtze. Both suffered casualties and damage. In Peking, peace talks have broken down and the communists have begun an offensive along the Yangtze. In London, Commonwealth Prime Ministers are gathering for the meetings due to begin tomorrow. In China, two more British warships, the cruiser London and the sloop Black Swan, have been fired on and hit by unidentified artillery in the Yangtze. They were moving upriver towards the British frigate Amethyst, damaged earlier by shore batteries. The fire became so heavy that Admiral Madden, flying his flag in the London, decided that the ships could go on only at the expense of considerable casualties. They therefore returned to Shanghai. The destroyer Consort, which had earlier tried to help the Amethyst, is also back in Shanghai, with 9 of her crew dead and 2 of her guns knocked out by shellfire. Amethyst is still anchored upriver from the batteries and has reported that she may be capable of 17 knots. But the Admiralty say her charts are destroyed and it would not be desirable to let her run the gauntlet of concentrated fire. Charts and medical aids are being brought overland from Nanking. Wounded from Amethyst are on their way to Shanghai by rail. In Peking, the peace talks, which it was...
Exhausted and battle-weary crew shelter below decks. In the cramped conditions, they sleep wherever they can, propped against pillars, slumped over a table, and for a lucky few, on padded benches. One lies on his back on a trestle table, another slumped in a hammock. Frank walks in and surveys the scene, tiredness etched into his gaunt features. With hands on hips, he manages a small smile before turning and heading out. In a basic clinic.
You okay, mate?
Sure. I'm fine, thanks, buddy. What do you think's going to happen to us?
Don't worry. They'll fix us up. They're good people here, you know? We'll be all right.
Two Chinese porters enter, one bearing a stretcher. A nurse points to Boy Martin's older shipmate, and the porters place a stretcher at the side of his bed. Boy Martin looks concerned as the porters lift his mate off the bed and onto the stretcher.
Where are they taking you, Petty?
I don't know, mate. Don't you worry. I'll be back. I'll be all right. Don't you worry.
Nurse?
The nurse comes to sit on the edge of Boy Martin's bed.
Where are they taking him? Where are they taking him?
She smiles serenely and strokes his brow. Breathing heavily, the older seaman lies back on a simple cloth-covered operating table. A nurse cuts away a bandage around his chest with a pair of scissors. A surgeon enters, wearing round, thick-lensed glasses.
There's a steel splinter in your chest that must be moved.
Sure. Go ahead. If you get that out, maybe I'll be able to breathe.
Yes. I'm sorry, but we are poor and have no anesthetics here. It's going to hurt. But you'll feel better when it's done.
The surgeon reaches for a scalpel.
I am sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead, John.
Bannister, stoker mechanic. And Martin, boy seaman.
That's right, sir. You see, when the Chinese were leading us through the minefields, we got separated somehow.
Were they badly wounded?
Pretty bad, sir. Paddy, that's Bannister, sir, he had shrapnel in the chest. And boy Martin had it in the thigh. They couldn't walk, either of them.
They could have been taken to the hospital at Wood's Inn. Miss Lee is the matron there. Maybe...
Excuse me, Charlotte. There's a call for Commander Cairns. It's the British Embassy at Nanking.
Oh, thank you.
The phone is in my office, Commander. I'll show you.
The nurse straightens the seaman's blankets.
You ought not to be talking, sailor.
Well, I was only telling them about Bannister and Martin, nurse.
Sure.
There you are, Commander.
Thank you. Don't go, Miss Dunlap. Hello? Cairns here, sir.
Donaldson here. I'd better talk quickly before we lose this line. First, have any more wounded reached you yet? Well, they should soon. Now, listen. Amethyst has refloated, but the flagship and Black Swan couldn't get up the river to her. I know, neither can I. Well, they came under very heavy fire. Yes, a lot of casualties. It would have been hopeless to go on. Yes, Amethyst knows. She's putting the rest of her wounded ashore by landing craft. Intelligence reports are that the communists are about to cross the river in force tomorrow. Now, these are your orders.
All the men who got ashore must be evacuated by train to Shanghai as soon as possible.
I've already made arrangements for the wounded to go, sir. And the American doctors offered to go with them.
Good, but send the unwounded, too. We can't risk their being captured. We'll use your authority from Admiral Wong to requisition extra coaches if necessary. Then get to Amethyst.
I don't care how you do it, but get out to her and take command. She'll be told to look out for you.
God knows what you'll find, but try and bring her up to Nanking if you can. Report to CNC Far East Station and the Vice Admiral when you're on board.
Yeah?
Right, sir. I thank you. Goodbye, sir. I'm ordered to evacuate all these men by train to Shanghai.
Very sensible. When do they think the communists will attack?
Tomorrow.
Well, that should give you time.
You'll be leaving too, of course.
Sakes, no. Other people will be needing this hospital soon. Now, the problem I have to face is stretchers.
Steady. Keep it level.
Wounded crewmen are helped into a rowboat. One has a bandage around his body. Another is barely able to walk.
Careful now.
Keep his leg up.
That's it.
Weston's given an injection.
Thank you, Doctor.
If I may say so, you need hospital treatment.
I'm okay.
Have you had food?
Horse's neck.
Horse's neck?
Brandy and ginger ale.
Brandy and ginger ale? Horse's neck?
I can't seem to keep anything else down.
Horse's neck.
Cheers.
You're going, old boy. Number one's orders.
Number one ought to be going himself.
I agree. But he's in command of the ship. I'm not.
The stretcher's lowered into a rowboat. Frank climbs back up onto the deck and looks around.
That's a lot, sir.
Right.
That's it.
All right, coxswain, let go.
There she is. It's the Sunderland.
A plane with a wide fuselage and smooth curving underside sweeps overhead. Looking down from the air, a small boat pulls away from the Amethyst, trailing white water in its wake. Sunlight glints on the water as the plane descends, its path followed with interest through binoculars by a Chinese soldier. Viewed through the cockpit window, the Amethyst looms off the port wing as the plane comes in to land on the water. The plane's underside skims smoothly across the water. Two men in coolie hats help an officer off the Amethyst and into a shallow-hulled sampan.
Shove off!
The Amethyst's threaded ensign still flies off the stern as the plane taxis across the water, then turns. Chinese soldiers remain vigilant as a hatch opens in the plane's fuselage, just as the small, shallow boat pulls alongside.
Glad you made it. We needed the supplies badly.
Give me a hand down with this stuff.
The Chinese open fire, and an RAF officer's forced to throw himself prostrate into the boat.
Wait!
The plane's propellers roar into life, and it thunders down the river as more shells hit the Amethyst. Hulking body lifts into the air. Shells continue to rain down as the tiny boat returns to the Amethyst. One lands just off the stern as the RAF officer is helped on board. Everyone hits the deck.
I'm a doctor.
Welcome aboard. You're just in time for tea.
Walker dips a cup into a metal container and takes a sip.
How you feeling, son? Had any sleep lately?
Bit.
Scared?
Not so much when the shelling was going on. I couldn't think straight. But now... Yes, I am a bit.
That's right, son. Same as the rest of us. You said you weren't, I'd have crowned you.
Walker puts down the cup and lifts a pair of binoculars to his eyes. A small launch heads towards the Amethyst.
Landing craft approaching. Tell Lieutenant Ett. Through the damaged part in the tiller flat.
Yes, sir.
Walker takes another look through his binoculars. Commander Kerin stands at the front of the launch, alongside a Chinese officer. Two crewmen stand at the rear. The Chinese officer passes Kerin's a pair of binoculars, training them on the Amethyst. Kerin sees crew members hurrying to ready a large gun. Kerin waves a large, plain envelope.
Someone waving.
Walker looks through his binoculars.
He's a naval officer. One of ours.
It's all right, coxswain.
The launch is equipped with a large front-facing gun fixed at a 45-degree angle. On board the Amethyst, the officer, Het, and Walker rush to greet Kerins as the launch draws alongside the stricken ship. Karen salutes the launch's captain, then climbs aboard the Amethyst.
I'm Het, sir. Glad to have you with us.
Thanks. There's a case of medical supplies down there. Get it on board, will you?
Aye, sir.
And that craft is not to leave till I say so.
Aye, aye, sir.
A number of bodies covered with blankets lie on the deck. Cairns glances somberly at Het before walking over to them. Cairns glances again at Het, then examines some of the shell damage.
Where's number one?
In the WT office, sir. The other officers are there, too. The CO's cabin and the wardroom were both hit.
How is he?
Pretty bad, sir. You know we had an RAF doctor flown into us?
Yes.
Well, he's rather worried about number one. Thinks he's got a shell splinter stuck in his lung. Says he ought to have been moved ashore with the rest of the wounded. This way, sir.
In the telegraph room.
This is Lieutenant Strange, sir. He was on passage with us to Nanking.
Strange.
And this is Flight Lieutenant Fernley.
Sir. I'm Cairns. Weston?
I'm sorry, I can't get up, sir. I have a horse's neck.
It's a bit early for me. You may know this already, but if not, I'm sorry to have to tell you. Your captain died on the way to Xinjiang. I've been ordered by the naval attaché to take over.
Yes, we've been expecting you. I'm glad you're here. I'm afraid we're very short-handed.
Yes. What's your medical opinion of this officer, Doctor?
Oh, I'm...
I consider it essential he should get a hospital.
Well, that's nonsense, sir. I feel all right. I'm not going ashore.
Sorry, you are to go ashore now. There's a boat waiting to take you back.
Yes, look here, sir.
The assistant military attaché will meet you at the pierhead.
I feel all right, sir.
Boat can't wait.
As Fernley leads him out, Weston turns to shake Karen's hand.
Cheers.
You'll be back soon.
Sir. From the Vice Admiral, sir.
This is confirmation that I'm to assume command.
The crew's gathered on deck.
There's him. Some facts. I've come from Nanking. I was assistant naval attaché there. During the last 36 hours, we've been locating the wounded and others evacuated from the ship. They're now on their way by train to Shanghai. I very much regret to have to tell you, however, that your captain died of his wounds yesterday. That leaves us, and I've been ordered to assume command. Now, the position is this. As you know, this ship was lawfully and peacefully on her way to Nanking. Well, she's still under orders to go there. We've no pilot to help us, but we've got charts, and we've got an echo sounder, so we're not helpless. Perhaps when it's dark, we can try to go on. Meanwhile, we're working normal routine again, and we'll begin by clearing up the house as much as possible. Let's get her looking like a ship again. Right?
Pieces of wreckage are hurled overboard as the crew sets about cleaning up the shell damage. At the bow, Walker looks through his binoculars at an approaching craft.
Motorboat approaching, sir. Wearing some sort of flag.
The boat steers towards the Amethyst's port side. As it gets closer, Walker takes another look.
Chinese army officers on board, sir.
Het looks concerned. Two Chinese officers climb up onto the Amethyst's deck.
I am Captain Kuo Tai, Area Garrison Commander, Chinese People's Liberation Army. Where is your captain?
This way.
Ni Tung Wo Lai La.
Het leads the two Chinese officers along the deck, with Frank bringing up the rear.
The
This is the area garrison commander, Chinese People's Liberation Army, sir.
Sitting at his desk, Cairns doesn't return Ko Tai's crisp salute.
I have come as the representative of Colonel Ping, political commissioner of the 3rd Artillery Regiment, Jinjiang Front. He is prepared, as authorized representative of our general, to receive apologies from the British commander and solve, through negotiations, all problems arising from the atrocious action of British warships in their invasion of the Chinese People's Liberation Army territory and their consequent responsibilities.
This ship had clearance to sail to Nanking. She was deliberately fired on without warning and without cause.
I am also instructed to inform you, Captain, that providing your ship remains here at anchor and causes no trouble, you will not be further harmed. If you attempt to move, you will be sunk. That is, of course, until the terms for a safe conduct are agreed.
I have no authority to negotiate with Colonel Ping.
You have radio, Captain. I suggest that you obtain the authority. A preliminary meeting can then be arranged. If you will send an officer in a boat to the shore when you are ready, he will be informed of the arrangements.
I have no boats. They were all destroyed.
I will order a sampan to be placed at your disposal immediately. We shall wait to hear from you. Captain?
Ko Tai salutes, and Cairns nods curtly. A figure standing at the rear of a sampan guides the simple craft along the amethyst. Two other figures sit aboard. One wears a coolie hat. Strain helps Frank into an officer's jacket. Karen studies him carefully.
Well, I don't think it looks too bad.
Made to measure, sir.
Yeah. Well, don't split it. It's my Sunday best.
But sampan's coming alongside now, sir.
Right.
We should let me come along with you, sir.
No, I can't risk that, number one. If these people try any funny business, there'd only be you and Strain left as it is. Oh, I think leading seaman Frank will look sufficiently impressive. How do you feel about it?
Well, it's a good thing I'm not an ambitious type of man, sir. Otherwise, I might get used to the idea. Excuse me, sir. One thing that does worry me, sir. What are the lads going to say when they see me all dolled up like this?
Well, I give you three guesses.
Resplendent in the slightly oversized uniform, Frank places one foot hesitantly out on deck. He jumps back. Then, seeing the coast is clear, strides away. On deck, the crew make fun of him. One tips his peaked cap, while another sweeps his path with a broom. They brush his uniform with the palms of their hands, and Frank pushes them aside, good-naturedly. Heading down some steps, several officers salute him. Orders returned as Cairns appears on deck. Frank stares down at the figures in the sampan. They smile and wave.
Blimey! Women!
Sitting side by side, Cairns and Frank head off across the water in the sampan. A young woman carries a small child in a sling on her back. Frank tries to amuse the child with a party trick, an illusion in which he appears to pull off his thumb and throw it overboard. Cairns looks unimpressed, as does the child. Frank considers performing another, then thinks better of it when Cairns casts him a sideways glance. Instead, he pulls a face at the child, narrowing his eyes by pulling at the corners with the tips of his fingers. He pokes out his tongue, then quickly adopts a normal expression as Cairns throws him another glance. Cluster of long, barrack-like buildings. Cairns and Frank are led into a room with a long table. On a wall is a large map and a portrait of Chairman Mao. Ko Tai gestures for them to be seated.
Colonel Ping is coming. I would suggest, Captain, that you conduct yourselves with deep respect.
I think the Navy knows how to conduct itself all right, don't you, Frank?
Yes, sir. The question is, does Colonel Peng...
Colonel Peng, a short, stocky man, walks in, followed by several Chinese officers. Cairns and Frank stand as the Chinese take up places on the opposite side of the table. Peng gestures for them to sit down. A young female officer leans across the table and takes a photo of Cairns and Frank. Peng hands a sheet of paper to Kotai, who's sitting beside him, then leans back in his chair.
Memorandum of conditions necessary to be fulfilled prior to negotiating of safe passage for British warship Amethyst by Political Commissioner Jing Jiang Front. Article 1. Amethyst and other British warships have committed brutal acts on and after April 20th by invading the front of the Chinese People's Liberation Army. The British Navy must acknowledge that such actions were wrong and apologize for such actions to the Chinese People's Liberation Army.
Apologies are due to the British Navy for the unprovoked attacks on British warships.
Article 2. Amethyst and other warships coordinated with Kuomintang forces and hampered military operations by the Chinese People's Liberation Army.
Untrue.
In the interests of Anglo-Chinese friendship, formal admissions of responsibility and regret must be made.
Britain's friendship for the Chinese people would not be served by such admissions.
You will no doubt wish to communicate the memorandum to your government, Captain.
I'll communicate it to my commander-in-chief, but in my personal opinion, his comments will not be favorable.
Perhaps time and his concern for your ship's company will persuade him in the end to modify his view.
In my view, nothing will persuade my commander-in-chief to accept this pack of... this distortion of the truth. Nothing!
I am sorry the Chinese people have no hostility against your ship's company. You smile, but it is true.
The ship's company will be very glad to hear it.
You have some Chinese rating in your ship, I think, no?
I have.
They will wish to mourn their dead. It could be arranged that they visit the temple in Changshan Island.
I must think about that.
We're not unfriendly, you see.
Very well, then I have a request to make. Among the wounded who were taken ashore were two men, Stoker Bannister and Boy Martin. We weren't able to trace them later on. I think it possible that these two men were taken to the hospital at Wutsin.
I will order inquiries to be made.
Chi Lai.
Bannister opens his eyes, a rivulet of perspiration running down his cheek. He looks up into the face of a pretty Chinese nurse, then a stern-looking Chinese officer.
You British sailor? From ship that come to kill Chinese people?
From Amethyst?
Yes, Amethyst.
The officer clicks his fingers, and Bannister and Martin are both lifted off their beds onto stretchers.
Well, that's the local position. Until the Navy is prepared to take the blame for everything that's happened, they'll keep us here. Naturally, the embassy is trying to bypass these local people and get a safe conduct for us from the new authorities in Nanking, but it's bound to take time. Those of you who've been out here before will know something about the way these people's minds work. They'll play cat and mouse with us. They'll pretend to give in, they'll make all sorts of concessions, and then when we think we've won, they'll go right back again to where they started. By continually raising our hopes and then shattering them, they'll try to wear us down. And we're all going to need a lot of patience.
Well, we'll have that, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I know you will. But I warn you, it may take weeks.
Here, mate, what's the idea?
Silence!
Colonel Peng walks in and gestures for the soldiers to leave him alone with Bannister and Boy Martin.
It has been decided to send you back to your ship.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yes, thank you, sir.
The Chinese People's Liberation Army has no quarrel with the sailors of the British Navy. It is only men like your captain and Winston Churchill who are unfriendly to the Chinese people. We too had our imperialists and warmongers until we swept them away. towards you only wish to show our friendliness. Is it not so also with you?
Oh, we're friendly enough, sir.
Yes, of course. Now you wish to go back to your ship, no?
That's right, sir.
Yeah. And see your families and sweethearts, perhaps, in England.
Yes, sir. We hope so, sir.
Yet, because of your ship, there are many Chinese soldiers who will not see their families and sweethearts again. It would be friendly of you to remember that now that you are returning to your ship.
I don't get that, sir.
No? You cannot be left unresponsible. If you will admit that, there will be no more to be said.
Admit what, sir? Our guns wasn't even loaded. You opened fire on us. We didn't have a chance.
Surely to be friendly if you...
Oh, friendly, my foot!
Your friend is not helpful. No. I thought that he was grateful to be sent back to his ship.
What do you want?
A simple statement of the facts.
I'll give you that.
Shut up, Keith.
Boy Martin's on crutches.
You opened fire on us first. And you went on firing even when the ship was aground. And then you fired on the boats with the wounded in them.
A Chinese soldier enters.
These men do not wish to go back to their ship. Excuse. Thank you.
Colonel Ping heads out and the soldier closes the door. A small craft with a large square sail drifts past the grounded Amethyst. Two other similar craft sail close by. The Amethyst bears the battle scars of war, its hulls badly scorched by fire, and a blackened hole by the gun turret shows where it took a direct hit. Below decks, a crewman in a vest wafts himself with a makeshift fan.
And now we have a special request for leading stoker mechanic McDonald of HMS Amethyst.
Hey, Stammer. You're all right, old.
Frank sitting nearby.
Well, fancy.
You notice they don't mention us on the news no more.
Of course not, they've forgotten us. It's the cricket season, isn't it?
Is it? I thought you were going to lose your temper with them today.
Oh?
So did Peng.
That was the idea.
How do you mean, sir?
Well, George, I've noticed that whenever Peng thinks he's pushed me too hard, he always makes a concession. That's how we got the mail clearance and the oil from Huji.
You think you'll get more oil?
I'm hoping we'll get those two ratings back this time.
In the telegraph room, French is transcribing a message.
Anything interesting?
Weather report from the subtle, sir. There's a typhoon heading northwest. She'll miss us, all right.
Give me a signal, Pat.
Cairns writes out a message.
When do you get power again for transmission?
Oh, not until 0800, sir.
All right. As soon as you get power, send this off. When you get the reply, bring it to me personally.
Aye, aye, sir.
A signal from Amethyst, eh? Rather an odd one. I'll read it out, Peter. Address to CNC, repeated Vice Admiral from Amethyst. Would be grateful for your advice, please, on my actions, if menaced by typhoon.
It is an odd question from an experienced seaman. I wonder if he's thinking of running for it.
and asking for your permission to try without compromising the emergency code.
Yes, that must be it. What are the latest intelligence reports?
Not good, sir. They moved up more guns recently. By day, they could sink in before you gone half a mile. They've also thrown a boom across the river by the nose at Kiang Ying. At night and without a pilot, he wouldn't stand a chance.
Well, if he's asking, it must mean that he thinks it's an acceptable risk. I shall reply that I'm all for it, if he feels reasonably confident.
I see, sir.
Now, how are we going to wrap that up in seamanship jargon so the Chinese won't guess what we're up to? Huh? Now, let's see. Take this down, Peter. Unlikely typhoons reach you in serious strength. The golden rule of making an offing and taking plenty of sea room applies particularly. Not bad, eh?
Damn good, sir.
Come in.
There's been a reply to your signal about the typhoon, sir, from CNC, the one you asked me to answer personally.
Thank you. So, French, how are the feet?
Well, sir, I can't seem to be able to keep them cool, and then they swell. One of the Tiffers thinks he might be able to rig a pair of bellows and blow cold air at me while I'm on watch.
Do you think that'd help?
Well, might, sir. Trouble is, there doesn't seem to be much cold air about to blow, does there?
No, there doesn't, is there? All right, Prince, thank you.
Aye, aye, sir.
French hobbles out. Karen studies the reply to his message, then turns over a sheet of paper on which is drawn a profile of the amethyst. Using a pencil, he shades in a small triangular area midships and a larger area at the bow. On deck.
We must reduce top weight. I want the upper deck and mast stripped of all that unnecessary equipment. Cut it away and stow it below. Then I want rolls of canvas cut and sewn to stretch right along there from A-gun to the eyes of the ship. Painted black. The blackout's getting very sloppy. May not be entirely necessary, but it'll keep the men busy. This idleness is bad for morale.
Yes, sir.
And another thing. I want the cable lashed with bedding.
Bedding, sir?
Yes. But first of all, I want the bedding well soaked in grease and soft soap.
Grease and soft soap. Yes, sir.
Every time the ship swings at our anchor, the cable makes scraping noises. It's getting on my nerves.
Yes, sir.
Carry on.
Cairns leaves some bemused looks behind him as he strides off. Two men are slopping handfuls of thick grease onto the cable chain. Frank comes to inspect their work. The men's hands are caked in the syrupy black gunk. As Frank turns his back to leave, they make as if to hurl some at him.
What did you say?
Nothing, Cox.
Well, stop the ruddy nattering and get on with it.
They slap their gummy hands back down on the cable. Karen's and Frank stand as Ko Tai walks into a room, which is cooled by a ceiling fan.
We are now returning Stoker Bannister and Boy Martin to the captain of HMS Amethyst to demonstrate the fact that we wish to maintain the friendly relations that have always existed between China and Great Britain.
Thank you.
A handshake's captured on camera.
Glad to have you back.
Good to see you, sir.
Good to see you, Bannister.
Oh, great to see you, sir.
How are you, son?
Fine, thank you, sir.
All right, Bannister?
Sir.
Well, I think we can get back to the ship now. Come on.
The boys have been getting real worried about you, lad. It's a case of here come the conquering heroes, all right. Uh-huh. How's your leg?
Oh, it's getting on fine, thanks.
Good. They treat you all right?
Yeah. But a funny lot, though, aren't they?
A square-sailed craft is cast into silhouette as it heads along the river at sunset.
We slip at 10 tonight. The moon doesn't set until 11 o'clock, but we'll have to risk that. We may take the batteries here by surprise. Let's hope we do. But the batteries lower down will be waiting for us. And that's when we'll need the darkness most. As it is, we'll have to hurry if we hope to pass the big guns at Wusang before dawn. Clear?
Yes,
sir.
And Williams, as far as the engine room is concerned, I want everything they can give me, and I mean everything. If we come under fire, I shall ask for black smoke.
Right, sir.
Guns now. Under no circumstances will we open fire unless we're fired on first. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Now, as soon as it's dark, there'll be a lot of work to do. I want to alter the appearance of the ship as much as possible. The more we can confuse the gunners or make them uncertain, the better. Coxswain, get those canvases I gave orders for rigged and have all white paint surfaces smeared with black. All hands in action rig, no white clothing to be worn at all.
Yes, sir.
If things go wrong, if we're badly hit and sinking, I shall beach the ship in order to save lives. The ship's company will get ashore. I personally will be responsible for setting the demolition charges in the ship. If that happens, I don't want any heroics. Your duty will be to try and reach Shanghai overland or to escape in junks to the open sea. Now, is that quite clear?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Then pass the information on. Well, let's hope we make it. At least we'll have a damn good try.
Now keep it quiet.
Aye, aye, sir.
Night has fallen, and Kerens oversees his plan on deck.
Bring her right forward now, boys. And don't make any noise.
Working by moonlight, a canvas sheet is stretched out on a line at the Amethyst's bow. In silhouette, it lends the bow of the Amethyst a deeper profile. The canvas is secured into place. In the engine room, Williams keeps a close eye on some gauges. Cooks are hard at work in the galley, preparing a mountain of sandwiches. In the medical quarters, a first aid box is filled with a selection of carefully chosen supplies. On deck, a shell is loaded into a gun, and Karen surveys the river through a pair of binoculars. Lowering them, he looks uneasy as he turns to speak to the crew.
Going downstream, I notice that all the civilian traffic carries a green light over a red. We'll do the same.
Yes, sir.
Now, about getting underway. We've got to slip the cable and turn the ship without making a noise that they can hear on the bank. That's why I had the cable wrapped and greased. But we've got to be careful. If we make a racket, they'll wake up to what we're doing and blow us out of the water as we turn. Now, carry on. Good luck.
Good luck, sir.
Thank you, sir. Sir. I've got the charts all up to date as far as possible and in the right order. They're on the bridge.
Is the echo sounder all right?
Calibrated and checked, sir.
We'll make sure that there's a reliable rating standing by it for the run. Someone who knows how to read it.
Right, sir. Gyro correct, no error. Shall I have some sandwiches sent up to your cabin, sir?
No. I'll be on the bridge till we slip. I want to get my eyes used to the dark.
Well, I'll have some sent up to you there, sir.
Right. Thanks, number one.
Kerens heads into the telegraph room.
Get this off right away. Emergency.
Aye, sir. Conditions aren't very good tonight, though. Must be electrical storm about somewhere. May take a bit of time.
Can't be helped. Get it through.
Aye, sir.
At an extravagant dinner party, a man brings a message to a high-ranking naval officer.
I'm sorry to butt in, sir, but this has just been received from Amethyst. We're having trouble deciphering the last sentence, but I thought you'd want to see it.
Thank you. Bring me the rest in as soon as it's deciphered.
Aye, sir.
The white uniformed officer glances at a clock on the wall. It's 3:50. He wraps a gavel and the table falls silent.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this moment I have a special toast to propose. His Majesty's ship Amethyst and all who sail in her.
Amethyst.
The Amethyst in silhouette. On board, everyone's at action stations. Kerens is on the bridge. In the wheelhouse, Boy Martin rubs his eyes, Frank standing just behind him. In the bowels of the ship, a man wipes the back of his neck with a cloth as he and others await orders. In the engine room, Williams monitors the gauges diligently. Fernley's deep in thought in the medical quarters, the shelves stripped bare of supplies. French shifts edgily in his seat in the telegraph room. Oblivious to it all, the ship's cat lies curled up asleep in a hammock. Gunners are at their post, as are the sonar operators. Moonlight shines on the gently rippling surface of the river.
We'll wait for the moon to go behind that cloud. Do you hear that, number one?
Sounds like a ship coming down river, sir. Yes, look, there she is. Just coming around the bend now. Probably one of those small cargo ships going down to Qianying.
Well, she's just what the doctor ordered. Something we can follow. Bridge, wheelhouse. Ring on main engines.
Obey telegraphs. 185 revolutions.
Ring on main engines. Obey telegraph. 185 revolutions, sir.
Williams picks up a phone.
Obey telegraph.
He turns a dial, then heads back to the gauges. With light strung from bow to stern, the cargo ship passes on the Amethyst's starboard side. Kerens follows its slow, steady progress. It chugs past, belching black smoke from its funnel. Kerens glances up at the night sky, then back at the cargo ship. He leans down to the voice pipe.
Slow ahead, port engine. Wheel amidships.
Slow ahead, port engine. Wheel amidships, sir.
Williams turns a wheel.
Slip!
The greased chain is set loose.
Wheel harder starboard. Starboard engine half astern, port engine half ahead.
The Amethyst's disguised bow slowly turns.
Midships.
Where's the midship, sir?
Silhouetted against an almost clear night sky, the Amethyst sets off downstream. Lit up like a float in a parade, the cargo ship steams onwards, with the Amethyst keeping close to its stern. Only a few hundred yards separate the two ships.
We're gaining on that steamer, number one. We'll remain darkened. With any luck, the control point won't notice us when they challenge her.
Karen stoops to look through an instrument.
Port 10.
Port 10. Telephone wheel answer.
Colonel Peng will be dipped in private when they find we've gone.
You better cross your fingers, Sam, before you make jokes like that.
Looks as if we've got away with it all right so far, sir.
Yes, those gunners must have been asleep.
A Chinese soldier spots the Amethyst through binoculars. Flares are fired into the air.
Pull ahead, both engines!
Artillery guns on the bank open fire.
Bridge, make to CNC! Am under heavy fire!
gun, open fire! Everything you've got!
The Amethyst unleashes a salvo of return fire.
It's a merchant ship, sir! They've hit her!
A fire has broken out on the deck of the cargo ship. One of the Amethyst's guns is reloaded with shells as brilliant white flares drift down above the ship. The Amethyst is shrouded in grey smoke from the continual bombardment.
They'll get the range from our gun flashes! Cease fire!
Cease fire!
Raging flames engulf the deck of the cargo ship as the Amethyst draws alongside. The cargo ship's horn emits a mournful howl, as if in agony.
Number one, black smoke, aye, sir.
Make black smoke!
A thick cloud of black smoke rises from the Amethyst, blending with its silhouetted form and obscuring it from view.
She's well alight, sir, and she's drawing that fire. We've lost our pilot, number one. From now on, we're on our own.
Trailing black smoke behind it, the Amethyst heads off into the distance. Stranded a long way behind is the stricken, burning cargo ship.
She'll be just about here.
Another signal in from Amethyst, sir. Still under heavy fire, just past Espiegel Point.
Here it is, sir. Yeah. She must be doing about 20 knots.
And what about the batteries at Rose Island?
Oh, they've been moved, sir. If she gets clear of Taoyuan, she's got a clear run as far as Qiang Ying.
They'll have to pass the boom there as well as the shore batteries.
The Amethyst's bow cuts a foamy furrow through the water.
Like a sandwich, sir?
No, thanks, I'm What are they?
Herring sensor.
No, thanks. What the system of marking the boom is after all these months is anyone's guess.
Fire on the starboard bow, sir. Red flashing light.
Yes, sir. I've got it.
There should be two lights.
Only one visible, sir.
Port 5.
Port 5, sir.
Keep your eyes skinned, look out.
Aye, aye, sir. 5 before we launch, sir.
Definitely only one light, sir.
The question is, which side of it is the channel?
Will you leave it to port or starboard?
Which would you?
Amidships.
Amidships, sir.
I'd rather not say, sir.
Steady on 095 degrees.
Course 095, sir.
We'll leave it on the starboard hand. As close as possible.
Depth now.
3.5 fathoms, sir.
Tell the engine room we're approaching the boom. Everything they've got. Depth.
3 fathoms, sir.
The Amethyst steers a course towards a narrow channel.
East 5.
Starboard 5, sir. 5 starboard wheel out, sir.
2 fathoms, sir.
Midships.
Midships. Course 119, sir.
A small light bobs on the water in the center of the channel.
2 fathoms, sir.
Hope the skipper knows what he's up to. Otherwise, we're going to run aground.
Jod House Bridge. 1.5 fathoms, sir.
Slow both engines.
Slow both engines, sir.
There are tense faces on the bridge. Karen's eyes narrow in concentration. The Amethyst negotiates a narrow path between two partially submerged vessels. Breathes a sigh of relief as the Amethyst sails safely through the blockade.
a vengeance.
Go ahead for a vengeance, sir.
2 fathoms, sir. 3 fathoms, sir. 4 fathoms, sir.
That'd be quite a turn, that did.
From CNC, sir. How are you?
Back to CNC.
So far, okay.
So far, okay. Aye, aye, sir.
You know something, number one? I can manage one of those sandwiches.
Aye, aye, sir.
The Amethyst steams on towards low hills on the distant horizon.
If she can't get at least 10 miles beyond Busan before dawn, I think she ought to lay up somewhere and wait for darkness again. What do you think?
Perhaps she could take the Tsung Ming crossing and North Channel.
She'd have to take it pretty slowly, sir.
From Amethyst, sir. 100 up. Just that, sir.
Sounds cheerful enough. Yes. Well, there's the 100-mile mark, sir. He should reach Wusang at about 5:30. Then we better move into cover. Flax, make this reply. A magnificent century.
Water bubbles and churns off the ship's stern as the Amethyst ploughs on across moonlit water.
From CNC to Concord, sir, repeated to us. If Amethyst passes Wusung near dawn, support her by engaging forts from seaward if they open fire.
Very good.
There are the Wusang forts. There.
But the river's miles wide there, sir. Can't we keep away from them?
Not far enough to get out of range. They've got 6-inch guns. Our only chance is they won't see us.
A large silhouetted mound looms on the port side.
Green 4-0 searchlight, sir.
We're a sitting duck if they pick us up. Have to try and keep out of their beams. Here goes.
Tell the engine room to give us everything they've got.
Aye, aye,
damage acceptable. How much water is there to port, number one?
Bridge chart house, depth now.
3 fathoms, sir.
Port 5.
2 fathoms, sir.
Midships.
Midships, sir.
Steer 045.
Searchlights sweep the water from both sides of the river as the Amethyst steers a mid-course. Light washes across the bridge.
They must be blind not to see us.
That's just the spill of the light.
They'll have to hit a square with a beam before they see us.
A beam picks out the Amethyst.
This is it.
The Amethyst exchanges fire with the guns at the fort. Geysers of spray explode high into the air, just short of the Amethyst, as the fort guns gauge their range. The beleaguered warships lit up by a flurry of fireballs. The guns continue to unleash a blistering offensive, enveloping the Amethyst in smoke and spray. On board, there are anxious faces from the wheelhouse to the engine room. The ship sails on through a storm of exploding shells. In the wheelhouse, Frank wipes his hand across his mouth and removes his hat, wafting his face with it. The Amethyst lets off a few more shots as the shelling appears to subside. Morning. Sunbeams radiate from behind a dark cloud on the horizon in an otherwise clear sky. The Amethyst ploughs across the peaceful waters of the open sea. On the bridge, Karen swigs from an enamel mug. Frank has a distant look in his eyes as he takes a proffered mug of tea.
Oh, better wake your pal up.
Oi!
He's had a busy night, full of hair all the way.
Oh, dear, lovely.
Kerens raises his binoculars to his eyes and gazes through them for several moments before lowering them with a smile and a look of intense relief.
It's Concord.
Another warship appears as a grey, misty speck on the horizon.
Concord in sight.
Aye, aye, sir.
Wheelhouse, tell the engine room. We're out. Concord's in sight.
Aye, aye, sir.
The Concord's in sight.
We made it. We made it.
We've done it. Done it.
A smile lightens Kerens's handsome, gallant features as the Concord approaches.
Concord signaling, sir. Fancy meeting you again.
Reply, never. Repeat, never has a ship been more welcome.
The crews on both ships gather on deck, waving and cheering. The two warships pass each other.
Unclassified. To CNC Far East Station, repeated Admiralty. Have rejoined the fleet south of Wusun. Full stop. No major damage, no casualties. Full stop. God save the King.
Please convey to the commanding officer and ship's company of HMS Amethyst my hearty congratulations on their daring exploit to rejoin the fleet. The courage, skill, and determination shown by all on board have my highest commendation. Splice the main brace, George R. The end.